Hello and welcome to the PCOS Nutritionist Podcast. If we haven't met yet, my name is Claire. I'm a registered nutritionist and I have a background in exercise science as well. And I focus solely on PCOS because I know how damn frustrating those symptoms can be. I have it myself and I've got a bit of a vendetta against it, trying to figure out things for myself and then help you guys understand what's going on in your bodies too. So today we're talking all about gluten. It's a really controversial topic, I would say, in PCOS, with a lot of practitioners recommending complete aversion. So we're going to go through what the research is showing, clinically what I've seen, and all the guidance around that from my point of view. Before we get into that, hope you're doing well. I hope that you are okay. I know that for many of you, you've been locked down for such a long time. I'm based in New Zealand, so we're allowed out a bit more now. But I know, like in the UK, you know, many of you are still not able to socialize with other people, and I know how frustrating that can be and lonely. So I hope that you're okay, and I hope that you enjoy our chat here today. Well, it's just me talking about gluten, and hope that this helps you understand your body and your PCOS a bit more. So as I said, gluten and PCOS is a very controversial topic. A lot of people have very, very strong opinions about it. But unfortunately, there isn't a huge amount of research. So I'll be kind of drawing on what we do have available. But I think what is really obvious is that there's a massive gaping hole in the evidence about women with PCOS and removing specifically gluten and seeing how that impacts their lives and their symptoms. So before we get into the specifics of gluten and PCOS, I just want to explain a bit about what gluten actually is, because I know it's kind of become synonymous with like healthy food, and a lot of us don't actually realize what it actually is. So all gluten is, it's a tiny protein that's contained in wheat. Barley and rye have got a similar protein as well. And so it's not, it doesn't have any impact on calories, it doesn't have any impact on insulin, that's, you know, that protein. And so just remember that, because we'll talk about that a little bit later on as well. So when I, so going back to my background, like I studied nutrition, so my Bachelor of Science majoring in Human Nutrition at the University of Otago in New Zealand about 10 years ago. And I probably finished about 10 years ago. That is showing my age, seriously. But when I went through there, you know, the research was a bit limited. It was that people should only remove gluten if they had defined celiac disease. Okay, so celiac disease is an autoimmune condition where when your body is exposed to gluten, your body creates antibodies against your own tissue, your small intestine, and it will start attacking your small intestine and cause damage there. And so the recommendation was that only people that had diagnosed celiac disease should remove gluten. Since then, there has been the discovery of a different condition called non-celiac gluten sensitivity. Now, if you look up any research journals, if you go to say scholar.google.com, when you type in non-celiac gluten sensitivity, you will see that there is quite a bit of research on this. Not a huge amount, definitely nothing compared to celiac disease, but it is starting to become. And this is, it's been found that it's not just people that have celiac disease that have some symptoms relating to gluten. And often these symptoms can be more like gastrointestinal symptoms. So maybe they get gas and bloating, maybe they also get things like brain fog or sore joints or headaches or when they eat gluten. And so they have coined this other term, non-celiac gluten sensitivity, to try and, you know, to recognize the fact that a lot of people do have reactions when they eat gluten, even though they aren't celiac. There has been a little bit of, I would say, discussion about this, that there's thought that maybe it's not actually gluten itself, but the fact that it is FODMAPs. So FODMAPs are basically fermentable carbohydrates that your bacteria ferment when, and so a lot of people when they eat these, they get gastrointestinal symptoms. And this is why many people that get IBS will be put on a low FODMAP diet to relieve the symptoms. And so there's a bit of discussion about whether non-celiac gluten sensitivity is actually a thing, or whether it's just the fact that the FODMAPs is what's causing the symptoms. So according to the Centre for Celiac Research, non-celiac gluten sensitivity affects up to 6% of the population, but other researchers have claimed that it affects up to 30% of the population. There is no research on women with PCOS or people with PCOS and gluten sensitivity, non-celiac gluten sensitivity. There is one study though found on PCOS and celiac disease, but there was no increased prevalence of celiac disease in women with PCOS. So we don't think that that's the reason. And the one of the top researchers in this area, a guy called Dr. Alessio Fasano, he authored a book called Gluten Freedom, and he's done quite a few research studies on this area. He said the symptoms of gluten intolerance can include abdominal pain, and that's about 70% of people, eczema or rashes, about 40%, migraine headaches, 35%, foggy mind, brain fog, about another third of people have that, chronic fatigue, another third, diarrhea, another third. But again, like all of those symptoms, none of them are just related to like gluten sensitivity, right? You can have eczema or a rash, or like, for example, a migraine headache could be caused by premenstrual tension, okay, as opposed to anything to do with gluten. So just because you've got those symptoms, don't think, oh, I've got this non-celiac gluten sensitivity. It's not necessarily, but these are the things that he found when he was doing his test. I think the problem at the moment is we don't have any reliable testing for this. They did think that they may have come up with something with, they were looking at different antibodies, but I think that's been kind of disproved by a lot of other researchers. So at the moment, there is no really clear guidance, and the guidance is just to pretty much just remove and then to add back in. But again, that comes with a lot of its own problems. A lot of people, when they actually researched this and looked into this, I think they found like 70% of people didn't actually, even after they've strictly removed gluten for like a year, 70% of patients still had the symptoms. So it's kind of one of those things that's like, really, it doesn't really make a whole bunch of sense. I think the other thing is that a lot of people in general, and a lot of women have reported feeling better and symptoms better when they have removed gluten. And so then, you know, it's really easy to jump on this and say, well, gluten's the issue, when actually it could not be the gluten, but could be something entirely different. So there's a lot of going on here, and a lot of very differing opinions. And I would say that we can't be super clear cut about it. But I'll give you what I think is the research at the moment. So after going back, when I was saying before, after I finished my nutrition degree, I mean, I was still getting a lot of my symptoms. It didn't really help me understand my PCOS and why I was gaining weight. I mean, at this stage, when I first graduated, I didn't know that I had PCOS, but I didn't explain why I was gaining weight when I was exercising 20 hours a week and eating a pretty low-calorie diet. It didn't explain, you know, my acne, missing periods, especially missing periods when I was actually gaining weight. A lot of people put it down to the fact that I was an athlete and therefore it was due to low body fat, and I was like, sorry, just take a look. You can probably see that I am not at a really lean, low body weight, low body fat. And so I started looking into what else could be going on. Finally got diagnosed with PCOS. And again, even after that, it still didn't really start to come together for me. The only options given to me were the pill and metformin. And even after being on those, didn't really seem to help my symptoms a great deal. So that's when I got into further study, and I actually went and did some further study in functional medicine. And when I was doing this, the main guidance was that most people with chronic conditions, PCOS included, do better on like a gluten-free diet. And so having done this myself and seen improvements, and having done with some women as well and seen improvements for them, I naturally as well thought, great, well, this is the answer. This is what we should do. We should all women with PCOS should be gluten-free. But unfortunately, after a couple of years of working with thousands of patients, I actually found that this wasn't true. I was like, so if I've been telling all of these women to go gluten-free, but not all of them have had improvements, and if it was this one thing, then why wouldn't all of them have improvements? And that was the matter of fact for me. And when it comes to something like that, every clinician or every researcher has to look at what they're doing and say, hold on. Well, if what I'm doing, what I'm saying is that, you know, this is the truth, that, you know, gluten causes all these issues, but actually we're not seeing this in clinical practice, then we've actually got to start questioning what we're saying. And that's where I got to, was I was like, hold on, this isn't actually improving. I've got a whole bunch of women here who haven't had improvement in their symptoms, even though I know that they will have been quite, compliant with that as well. And so that's when I started doing even further research into PCOS and trying to understand a bit about the fact that we're not all the same. And this is what I keep sending you guys back to, is this whole, you know, understanding your PCOS root cause or PCOS type, that you are different. You are different from me. I am different from Angela next door, who has also got PCOS, for example. And if there was one diet or one fix for everyone, then we wouldn't be on this podcast talking about this. You wouldn't be listening to this because we would already know the answer. But the fact of the matter is that there is not one PCOS. It is a syndrome. And by definition, a syndrome is just a group of symptoms that people often experience. And just the medical world just wants to give that a name so we can understand it better. Okay, so think about other syndromes like irritable bowel syndrome, chronic fatigue syndrome. What do those two conditions have in common? Well, two conditions is that really hard for the medical world to try and find a solution for them. And also, generally, there isn't one accepted kind of treatment plan for them. And that's because it's likely as well that they're different. While they might have similar symptoms, the reason behind those symptoms likely is completely different. And if you've listened to this podcast for a while, you'll know me always harping on that. You know, up to 80% of women with PCOS have some problems with their insulin. Their body's producing too much insulin. It's called insulin resistance, or that your insulin isn't functioning optimally. About 50% of people with PCOS, they have too much stress hormone. Their stress hormones are overactive. About 25% or a quarter have a thyroid condition. Chronic inflammation is often the case for many people as well. So really it's about understanding what's going on for an individual, rather than just having blanket things like all women with PCOS should be gluten and dairy free. So I disagree with that now. I really disagree with that. I think, and the other reason I disagree with it is because you could easily look at this like I did and say, well, you know, many people have seen an improvement in their PCOS symptoms when they do remove gluten, so why don't we just say to everyone, well, you might as well just try it, right? It's not going to harm you if done for a few months, and just see whether your symptoms improve. But what I found as well was that many of the people that I were working with had a history of disordered eating. And so it was all very well for me to say, well, just remove it, because I haven't had that history. And I can actually quite easily take foods and just remove them out, and it doesn't really affect me too much because this is my life, this is my background. I can kind of just swap out foods in my diet, and I find that really easy to do. Whereas, and so I was looking at this through my lens of being like, come on guys, it's not that big a deal. Just, okay, well, instead of having pasta, have some potato or sweet potato. Like, just, you just have to change what you eat. But that wasn't the reality for a lot of the women that I were working with. Many of them, the reality for them was when I said to them, hey, why don't you try removing gluten from your diet? They would try that. And when they, you know, for example, went out for dinner one night and they thought, great, well, I can't have like pasta or something, so instead I'm going to go for Thai. And they went for Thai. And then they found out, oh my God, this, you know, this, the curry had soy sauce in it, and therefore I got some gluten. And they, because of the conditioning and their background, they would feel like they had completely failed. They'd be like, oh my God, Claire said I had to be strictly gluten-free and remove it for 3 months and then try and add back in. And now I've gone and eaten gluten and I feel like such a failure. And well, what's the point now? I'm just going to ruin it all and eat everything I want for the next week and then try and go back on, you know, and do it again in a week's time. And it led to some quite restricting and binging behaviors. And this is something that I didn't really think about, because the way that I think about food is entirely different from that. And so my perception of what would happen, being that they would just try removing gluten for 3 months and then try add it back in, wasn't the reality for a lot of the women that I was working with. It wasn't that. It led to some quite restricting patterns. And given that many women with PCOS have disordered eating, and that's been their life for them, and they have been through a lot of disordered eating patterns, or have even had clinical eating disorders, that can be really triggering for them. So just saying, well, just give it a try, there's no harm. But actually, that's not true. This could be harmful, especially if it's kind of triggering a lot of those binging and restricting behaviors. So I would say really understand yourself as well. If you know that you're kind of more prone to that, then be even more wary when you're following people and they're saying, woman with PCOS must remove gluten and dairy and, you know, other foods, is going, hold on, you don't know the first thing about me. What actually if that doesn't even make a difference? And what if I have had this past of, you know, somewhat disordered eating and this could actually trigger that again? The second part is that I didn't see that it actually, for a lot of women, that it was the most important thing. And when we are looking at lifestyle changes, we have to be realistic about how much we can take on at one point and whether we are, you know, and looking at whether those changes are going to be sustainable for that person for the long term. So often when we remove gluten to see if it's, say, impacting you, so for example, maybe you do go to a dietitian or a nutritionist and say, hey, I've got a lot of these irritable bowel syndrome symptoms, and I've had the celiac test done and I'm not celiac, you know, maybe they might say to you, great, well, let's just try removing gluten for a time and see if that helps you. That doesn't necessarily mean that that's needs to be a sustainable diet for you. Often it's just trying to figure out what, if that's part of the trigger for you, if that is causing some of these symptoms. And because there is no reliable testing, that's pretty much the only way that we can do it, is just to remove and reintroduce. So just thinking about that. But the other thing, what I was going back to what I was saying before, the main point was that when I was looking at women and I was saying, right, what are the, being realistic about what we can actually achieve in terms of habit changes. The habit changes are super freaking hard. And if we try and go in and change too much at once, it is super overwhelming and you're less likely to be able to stick with those changes, even in the short term, let alone the long term. And this is what I found when I was working with women one-on-one, is that often I would, because I didn't know whether they were going to come back for a follow-up appointment, because I didn't know whether funds were an issue for them, whether they could afford to, and maybe that was the only chance I was going to be able to get across to them some of the things that they needed to do to help their PCOS. So I would throw everything, including the kitchen sink, at them. I'd be like, right, well, try this, try removing that gluten, but also we need to try and get your insulin down because that's an issue here. So you need to, you know, we need to be careful about sugars and fruit juices and lots of other things that can stimulate insulin. And they were just so overwhelmed. I can't imagine now some of my poor clients and just how overwhelmed with the amount of information that I was throwing at them. And the same thing in the earlier days of my program, the PCOS Protocol. Again, it was because there are so many things we don't know yet about the human body that we were trying lots of things to get the outcome for them. And that's what I really want, is I really want you to see some improvements in your symptoms. And so I want to be able to give everything possible to you that might make a change. But again, the outcome, repeatedly got told this by our protocol woman. They're like, Claire, this is, wow, so much information, but it's overwhelming. I know you say to us, like, it's okay, you don't have to implement all of it. It's just here for you in case you need it. But they're like, but the result is we do feel like we need to implement it because it's there. And when we don't, we feel like a failure, and then we're more likely to go back to just eating what we were before rather than just introducing small changes and actually being able to stick with them. And I think this is the other big component of habit change, is the behavioural aspect of it, is that we've got to be really realistic. And this is why my approach now is actually much more on to focus on what, given your symptoms and blood test results or whatever we have for you in terms of figuring out the PCOS, like what I term root cause or type, is let's actually focus on the most important thing for you rather than throwing the kitchen sink of all possible outcomes at you and letting you try and fail at those. So when it comes to most women with PCOS, we know that insulin is the biggest factor. So for a woman coming through now, it's the same thing I do in my PCOS protocol as what I always do in with working with someone one-on-one, is try and figure out what the problem is first. Otherwise, I use this analogy a few times. I hope that you haven't got bored with it, but it would be like me taking my broken car to the mechanic and saying, hey, I need, you know, this car's broken, it's not working, I need you to fix it. And then going, oh, right, okay, well, here are all the parts for you. Let's try and change them and see if that helps. I'd be like, excuse me? Like, that sounds like a really freaking expensive and long-winded way to get to the outcome that we're looking for, which is to fix my broken car. And that's kind of the same as what we're doing if we say, right, well, here you go, without knowing anything about you, just going, right, well, remove gluten, remove dairy, here, myo-inositol, Vitex, magnesium, all these supplements, do strength training for your exercise, don't go running, you know, all of these really generic things. Is like, hold on, they could be completely irrelevant for me. I could be potentially making my symptoms worse. So I always want to figure out what the problem is first, and that's why I always focus on that, whether it's a one-on-one client or whether it's someone coming through my protocol, try and identify what the main issue is, and then we can actually work on the most important lifestyle changes. And in, I would say, 90% of cases, gluten is not the main culprit, right? So that's definitely not the thing that I'm focusing on. I'm actually for, you know, if we figure out that insulin is the issue, which it is for 80%, then my main focus is bringing your insulin down. And the gluten protein, that small protein that's in wheat and barley and rye, doesn't increase insulin. But those grains, the wheat and barley and rye, do contain quite a bit of carbohydrate. And that is what can raise insulin, especially if they're more refined grains. So when that grain has been ground down to a pulp to make that from a wheat seed or grain into a white flour. Okay, so in that process of breaking that down, what we do is we take out a whole lot of fiber in there, which helps to kind of slow the amount of blood sugar and insulin that we release when we eat products made from that. So products made from white flour, think pasta. Okay, pasta is made from white flour. Bread often is made from white flour as well. So those are some of the products that I'm sure, if you've heard of the glycemic index or low GI food, you'll know that they are higher GI food, which means that your body produces a lot more blood glucose quicker than, say, if you just ate the whole wheat grain whole. So going back to PCOS and how this is related, when you do a search for PCOS and gluten in the scientific literature, you will find no studies. The closest you'll get is some studies which looked at removing starch and dairy from women's diets, and I think this is probably in response to the popularized diets for PCOS, and how that affects their body fat levels and their ability to burn fat. And the research is really positive. It showed that when women removed all starches and a lot of dairy products, they had improvements in their BMI, so they lost weight. They lost weight around their stomach, their waist circumference. They had a reduction in fasting insulin, and also their testosterone levels as well. But when you actually look, so from the outset, you'll go, well, fantastic. That is great evidence for why we should remove, you know, gluten and dairy. But actually, when you look into what protocol they actually used in the research, you'll find that they removed all starches. So they removed all grains. And so if you remove all grains, you remove all gluten, but you also remove any of those products I was talking about before that increase blood glucose. So you remove pasta and you remove white rice and you remove bread. And they also removed things like sugar and fruit juices, which we also know have a big impact on our blood glucose and insulin as well. So this wasn't just about removing gluten. If we actually just wanted to look at what the impact gluten has on PCOS, you would have to do a randomized trial where you took a group of women and you gave them gluten-free wheat-based pasta, and then you gave the other group the gluten wheat-based pasta, for example, and then you measured them over the course of those next, you know, maybe 12 weeks or something like that, and see if they had any improvements. And if they did, we could then point it down and say, right, it was the gluten. But in this case, far more likely, and this is what the researcher said, is that it's because you're not having a lot of carbohydrate, and especially refined carbohydrate, which is going to spike insulin and blood glucose. And so when that's not spiking, it's much easier to lose weight. Also, when we haven't got as much insulin, our testosterone comes down. These are all stuff that I've talked about in previous podcasts. So you can go back and listen to, I think it was about episode 5 that I did ever of the podcast, where I talk about why weight is not about just about calories. And in fact, our insulin plays a massive role in that. And understand a bit more about how it's really likely insulin that's driving this issue here rather than the gluten. On the other hand, there are women with PCOS who I would remove gluten for. And this is the group with other chronic inflammatory or immune conditions. So the podcast that I did with Lara Bryden in the first season, she talks there about some research that has shown that women with endometriosis, many of them, I think it was upwards of 80%, saw improvements in their pain symptoms when they removed gluten. And this is potentially comes down to the fact that research may be indicating that gluten could cause something called intestinal permeability or leaky gut, where it could cause, so your gut lining, your intestines, should be pretty much closed off, a closed barrier stopping things getting into your body that shouldn't. And so your gut should only let through what it wants to, like vitamins and minerals and things like carbohydrates and proteins and fats for us to use for energy. And the hypothesis is that if gluten, because it's a big molecule, it can actually damage that intestinal wall and cause those cells to, or your body to launch an immune response when it gets into the body against that gluten, and therefore trigger immune issues and inflammation. And so with that in mind, if someone has, say, I think that's likely why it might be linked to endometriosis, and given that endometriosis is a chronic immune response. And the other group of people would be those with chronic autoimmune conditions. So an autoimmune condition is when your body is basically has created antibodies against your own tissue. So antibodies are things that, you know, when you get a vaccination, what they're doing is giving you a small amount of that virus so that your body can form the antibodies against that virus, and that when you're exposed to that again, then your body already has those antibodies. It already has an army that knows how to fight that virus. So your body can create inappropriately antibodies against your own tissue. Obviously, that doesn't make much sense. Why would your body want to attack its own, you know, for example, in celiac disease, its own gut lining, or in hyperthyroidism, Hashimoto's hyperthyroidism, it is your body creating antibodies against its own thyroid gland, or in rheumatoid arthritis, it's your body creating antibodies against its own joints. So it doesn't make a lot of sense. And this is where our immune system has gone a little bit haywire and is doing things inappropriately. And so we want to try and avoid, you know, your body being your immune system going haywire and therefore starting to attack your own gland. And if gluten could play a role in this, this is where I think, you know, if it was me and I had an autoimmune condition, I'd be really, I'd be being a bit careful. So this is where, if you have one of those autoimmune conditions, maybe your functional doctor or your nutritionist might recommend removing those for a while and seeing if that improves your symptoms. And it likely isn't something that you have to do for life, or maybe it is. It really depends on you and your symptoms. But given that people with autoimmune conditions are more than likely to develop another autoimmune condition later in life, we want to try and avoid that from happening as much as possible, which, you know, if that means removing gluten, then, and that's what you want to do, you want to try and avoid that, then that might be a really good way of stopping that progression of that autoimmune disease as well. So that could be, and given that 25% of women with PCOS have high antibodies to their thyroid gland, which is this early stages of Hashimoto's thyroiditis, then it would make sense why many women might see an improvement if they remove gluten there. So that's one case of where it might be a really good thing. But again, it's about understanding you. And so there's no point in going, well, okay, 25%, that's quite a lot, that's a quarter. So, oh, well, I haven't got the testing, so I'm just going to give it a go and see if it works. And I don't know, if it's me, I'm always then second guessing it. I'm always like, oh, but I haven't had the test done, so I don't know. And, and then you just, it's so much harder to stick to when you don't know why you're doing what you're doing. Whereas if you know, okay, yeah, I have got these autoimmune antibodies, you're way more likely to take it seriously and do it for, say, 2 to 3 months and then see if you get those improvements. So my philosophy is that I wouldn't remove gluten for every woman with PCOS. I would instead focus on what are the biggest, what's going to have the biggest impact. And for most people that, you know, insulin is just the issue, it's not going to have the biggest impact. And I don't do it as a matter of course, because I want to give women the biggest variety or the widest variety of foods that they can have, for the pure reasons that it's far more sustainable. We're less likely to have binging and restricting behaviors. Much more likely to be able to live a quote-unquote normal life where you're not having to call, you know, family members ahead of time before you go around there for dinner saying, well, I can't eat this, 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 or this, or having to take your own packed lunch to someone's house for dinner. And also it just means that we are less likely to have nutrient deficiencies or other deficiencies like fiber, right? Because if we, I don't know, if we remove some like other whole grains, that's where our fiber, a lot of our fiber comes from. And if we've got more fiber, then that's going to help with our insulin as well. And for those people that can tolerate them, i.e. their blood glucose does stay relatively stable, then I want them to be able to eat that if they can, if they can tolerate it. Removing it just because you have PCOS and just because it's got gluten isn't warranted in my mind. So as I said at the start, the research on this is vastly lacking. Like, there is no studies just on that gluten and PCOS. Will be fascinating if that comes to light. It'd be fascinating as well if they, you know, did some more research into the potential of PCOS being an autoimmune condition. There was some research that came out a few years ago which started to look into this a bit more because of the high rates of Hashimoto's and Graves and lupus and PCOS. It was actually a German study found that, you know, we have much higher rates of autoimmune conditions, and because autoimmune conditions tend to be clustered together, there was the potential, and I think it was something like, oh, I can't remember off the top of my head, I have written an article about this, but I think they found there was a antibody to our pituitary gland was higher in women with PCOS as well, and so therefore they were proposing that potentially it could be an autoimmune condition. But at this moment, based on the research and also seeing what I'm seeing clinically with women, I just don't think it is necessary nor the most effective thing. So that is my stance on gluten and PCOS. So that's it today for the podcast on gluten and PCOS. If after listening to this you're like, right, I really need to get to the bottom of what's going on for me, because I don't know whether insulin's an issue. Maybe it's that you've had an HbA1c test done or a fasting blood glucose and that everything's come back normal and you're like, oh, you know, well, that's not an issue. I can tell you that those tests are rubbish when it comes to picking up early stage insulin resistance. So don't look at that and say, no, my insulin's fine. In 80% of cases that I see, it's when they do the proper testing or when we look at their symptoms, we find that insulin is actually an issue. So if you're looking at that and going, or listening to this, and saying, man, I really need to get to the bottom of this for me, then come and join us in the Peace Use Protocol. Right, it is, that's exactly why we've designed it, is the way that I would work with women one-on-one to figure out what the problem is first and then match them up with the right food to eat. Exactly what I've been talking about here, that it's not just going, hey, well, let's just remove gluten. It's going, well, hang on, what's the problem? Is the problem, you know, an autoimmune condition? No. If not, then does it warrant it? In my mind, no. In my mind, it's figuring out, okay, if insulin's the issue, then let's actually fix that. And that could include things like whole grains, but also could include remove things that are going to be triggering or stimulating your insulin more. So if you want to find out more about that, then head to thepcosnutritionist.com/thepcosprotocol or just hit program for the main menu. And please don't hesitate to email us if you've got any questions. So if you've read through the webpage about that and you get to the end and you're like, I still don't understand this, or I still don't know if it's going to be right for me, don't hesitate to reach out. So our email is hello@thepcosnutritionist.com, and we are super happy to answer any questions that you've got. And we will tell you, we'll be very brutally honest, if we don't think that the PCOS protocol is right for you. I would tell at least 5 to 6 people a week that it's not right for them based on their symptoms or history or something that's going on. So if you're concerned, if you think, God, I don't actually know and I don't want to pay money if it's not right for me, ask us. We'll tell you if it's not. And after the first week, if we can identify what your PCOS type is based on the symptoms you've got, and then, you know, from further blood testing, if you need that, then we'll just refund you. You know, we're happy. We really only want to work with people that we can make a difference to. And so we don't want to take your money if we're not the right fit for you. So reach out and ask any questions that you have. So that's it for this week. Thanks so much for listening again. Really appreciate all of you guys. And we'll catch you next week. Now stand by for our disclaimer. The information contained in this podcast has been prepared for the purpose of providing information, including about the PCOS Nutritionist products and services, and is designed to support clients' overall wellness. It is not intended to provide medical advice or designed to rectify, treat, or cure any specific medical conditions or diseases. Nothing stated or shared in our podcast is intended to be and must not be taken to be medical advice. Please seek the advice of professionals as appropriate regarding the evaluation of any specific information, opinion, advice, or content contained in our podcast.